worked for a local news show, a local news website in Michoacán called Monitor Michoacán. So mostly what they have in common is that they work for smaller outlets, they work in smaller community, and as such are extremely visible, very highly visible, and easy to trace down, which probably added to the risk that they were running as reporters.
You've met with some of the family members. Can you tell us what they have said? Also, some of these reporters who were murdered actually raised their concerns, having gotten death threats before, all the way up to AMLO, the president of Mexico.
Yes, that's right. Specifically, Lourdes Maldonado, a reporter from Tijuana who was murdered earlier this year, traveled to Mexico City last year and actually told President López Obrador that she felt threatened, that she felt that her life was at risk. And she had actually applied for protective measures from the Baja California state government. Other reporters, such as Armando Linares, who was also murdered, warned about the risks that he was running as a reporter just weeks before his collaborator, Roberto Toledo, and about 2 months before he himself was killed. So these are reporters who are usually very aware of the fact that they are running risks, that they may face reprisals for their reporting, which is usually about organized crime or corruption or abuse by the authorities. And as you mentioned, yesterday I spoke with the brother of Yesenia Mollinedo, the reporter who was killed in Veracruz, and he told us that his family feels extremely exposed, that they have been in touch with federal and state authorities, but that they feel that the response by the authorities has been woefully insufficient and that they still feel that their life is at risk. Should be noted that Ramiro Mollinedo, the brother of Yesenia, is a reporter himself and that he also focuses on organized crime and corruption and abuse by authorities in the region where he's working. So that he, like the other reporters who were killed, is very keenly aware that he's running extreme risks.
Yeah, now, Albert, can you tell us more about Yesenia and Sheila and their
news
organization?
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
At KBOO, we're always busy bees preparing wonderful programming for you to enjoy. Now, during our spring membership drive, we need some money to go with that honey. Help us raise $56,000 by May 28th to support our efforts to pollinate the media landscape with locally produced, independent, people-powered community radio. Donate right now at kboo.fm/give or tap the donate button in the KBOO mobile app.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
My name is Jenka. I'm happy to be hosting today for KBOO Community Radio. And this part of the program, we've got Commissioner Joanne Hardesty and Challenger Vadim Mazursky joining us. This is for City Commissioner Position 3. And later in the hour, we will have candidates Ed Baker and Kim Cash. Other candidates, Renee Gonzalez, Chad Licey, Joseph Whitcomb, won't be able to make it. Now, welcome to both of you to this program on KBOO Community Radio.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure to be back on KBOO. Thank you.
All right. And Joanne Hardesty is the incumbent in this race, having served in City Council Position 3 since she was elected by Portland voters in 2018. And Vadim Mazursky is the challenger, one of the challengers in this race. And the election, well, it ends on May 17th. So your ballots need to be in to a drop box by 8 p.m. on May 17th. That's this Tuesday. I just want to introduce the candidates that we're talking to right now. Commissioner Hardesty has the backing of a number of groups, including Basic Rights Oregon, the Portland Association of Teachers, SEIU Local 49 and 503, Building Power for Communities of Color, the Sunrise Movement, the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon, and Elect Black Women. And Vadim Mazursky has the support of ASME, Local 189, the Public Safety Action Coalition, Oregon Smart Growth, the Commercial Real Estate Development Association, and the Portland Business Alliance. So, and for an introduction, I'd just like to ask each of you, what do you think are the top two issues facing the city of Portland right now and how you plan to address them? And I'll have Vadim go first, and then Commissioner Hardesty, and then we will switch order for each of the questions. So you'll each have a chance to go first on other questions. So Mr. Mazursky, what do you think are the top two issues?
You know, in this campaign, one of the pleasures is reaching out and talking to hundreds and thousands of individuals around Portland area. And there's no question that in people's minds, it is public safety and it is the homelessness crisis. And that homelessness crisis is certainly growing. The latest point in time count is that in Portland, it's up 50% the number of people we have living on our streets in the last 3 years since the last point in time count. While in Washington County, it's actually decreased the amount of people they have living in the streets. We're obviously not doing something right that other places are. And same thing with the rise in crime, particularly homicides and murder. It's skyrocketing. Last year, we broke the records for the most number of homicides. This year, we already have 37 people that have been murdered in Portland, and we're on path to break that record again. And we need to address these issues together. What we're seeing right now in City Hall is divisiveness, where our City Hall is not working together. There's no sense of urgency. And I want to bring unity and a sense of urgency to these problems. We can solve it. We are very rich here in Portland with respect to resources, but we're poor in coordination. And for addressing the homelessness issue that we have in our streets, the humanitarian crisis, we need to do a better job in coordinating and bringing people into temporary shelters where they can get services. We can get drug addiction services, mental health services, housing services. Most people on the streets say they have not had contact with housing service providers. And certainly the ones that have also said a large portion of them have not had second follow-ups. We need to change that. So bring people into designated camping zones, short-term shelters, safe rest villages, small micro villages. It'll take all of us to come together to make this happen. The problem is very large right now. So we need to bring together certainly the service providers, certainly the city, but also the developers. We need to bring together neighborhood associations and find ways to solve these problems. And that's what I will do. Make sure that people have a place to sleep, where they have a warm bed and a hot shower, but also where they're receiving services every single day, rather than waiting long-term for housing to be built while people are living and dying in our streets. And with respect to the public safety issues that we have here, particularly the crime, once again, we need to come together and do a better job. Yes, we need to invest in community outreach so that young people do not join a life of crime, and make sure that communities are lifted up. At the same time, we need to have enough police so when people call 911, there's actually a response to their call. We're seeing that it's one or the other in our City Hall. We've seen a defunding of the police and now refunding the police, getting rid of the Gun Violence Task Force, bringing back a new version of the Gun Violence Task Force. Let's fix things that are broken rather than break them ourselves. Let's coordinate working with people, but make sure that when people are scared, when people are being victimized, when people are out in the streets being hurt or attacked and they hear gunshots in their neighborhoods, that they can pick up the phone, call 911, and we'll have a response. And that entails having enough police in order to make sure that happens. That also entails other alternatives such as Portland Street Response, public safety support specialists, other versions of responses that did not entail armed police. But we do need to have enough police to deal with the crimes that we're experiencing. And I've heard that from thousands of people all over Portland. And we need to respond to those individuals who are out there, who are concerned about their families, concerned about their children being able to walk their streets, and concerned about their livelihoods. And so that's how we bring people together and solve the issues that's facing all of us.
All right, thank you. That was Vadim Mazursky. And now, Commissioner Hardesty, what do you think are the top two issues facing our city, and how are you addressing them?
Thanks, Jenka, for that question. Again, thank you so much for the invitation to be here. As your Portland City Council member, I can tell you my biggest joy has been serving the people of the city of Portland over the last 3 years and 4 months. The biggest issues today is community safety and a lack of housing that people couldn't afford to live in. And since my time on city council, I've actually done significant work in both of those issues. In fact, I helped create the first C3PO camps when COVID first hit, because we just abandoned houseless people on the streets of the city of Portland when those of us with privilege had the opportunity to get our needs met from home. I share the community's frustration when you look at every corner of the city, and I live in East Portland, and I can tell you we have camps everywhere. But there are a lot of people in those camps who work but can never save first last security deposit, and pet rent to afford the units in the city of Portland. Most Portlanders may not know that the median family income for a family of four today is $94,900, which means half people make more, half make less. I hear developers constantly, we want to build affordable housing, but there's just too much restriction. And when I say affordable for who, that's when the stumbling starts, because a lot of it is at 80%, which means if you don't make $72,000 to $75,000, you will not be able to afford to live there. We cannot criminalize poverty in our city, because as we've seen before COVID, all that does is create a revolving jail system that doesn't fix the fundamental problem. So what I will do in my time when once I'm reelected is to continue to roll out Portland Street Response. It will. We just voted on it this week to make it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all over the city of Portland. And that is a great example of how you build partnerships with all the stakeholders, but starting first with the people most impacted. What I was able to do with Portland Street Response is start first with houseless community members. What do you need when someone calls 911 on you? Because 50% of police calls are for unwanted people. And I don't know what the police can do with people who are unwanted, and it's the wrong first responder. So Portland Street Response started from the ground up. It included all the stakeholders, including Portland Business Alliance and social service providers, police, community organizations. That's how I built Portland Street Response. And it took a little longer than I wanted, but now it is fully funded and will be available for people in need who call 911. I did the same with police reform. Voters by 82% margin voted to create the first of its kind, truly independent police oversight board with subpoena power, with the ability to develop policy, and with the ability to fire officers who have been found guilty of misconduct as per community standards. I have built coalitions to get the work done at City Hall, and I'm really proud of my record. So what I want to do is come back and make sure that we fully implement the oversight commission's work that will put in the police oversight board, make sure that Portland Street Response is not sure shift. It still remains public sector jobs with living wages, unlike some folks who want to make it a nonprofit. And I want to make sure that we continue to treat all Portlanders with humanity, compassion, and respect. Your income should not determine your zip code, but today in the city of Portland, it absolutely does.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. And again, I'm switching order for each question. So Commissioner Hardesty will answer this next question first, and then Vadim Mazursky will answer second. How would you respond to the 2021 letter of noncompliance from the U.S. Department of Justice to the Portland Police Bureau, alleging violations of the 2014 settlement agreement guiding the use of force? How would you direct or change the policies around that in the Portland Police?
Yeah, let me just say I was appalled to see what Portland Police Bureau sent to the Department of Justice as their observation of the summer of 2020 in the city of Portland. And rightly so, the DOJ came down hard on Portland Police Bureau, and they should have. But since I've been on city council, what I've learned is that there was, prior to me asking the question, no review of the information Portland Police Bureau were sending to the DOJ in response to the settlement agreement. So when the Portland Police Bureau sent the report to the DOJ, they said, we don't know why people were so mean to us over the summer. We think they were just bored, right? They got tired of sitting at home. I was appalled that that was an official document sent to the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division. And the DOJ has some very specific recommendations. And one of them is body-worn cameras. And everybody knows that I have been opposed to body-worn cameras that would be owned by the police, where the police would control who had access to the data, who got to review the data, and when it would be made public. But because of the DOJ putting their foot down, now we will have an independent third-party organization owning the data. And I'm working to make sure that the data never lives within the police bureau. It should be part of the community safety division that is being led by Mike Myers, because once we put the system in place, once we put the community oversight board in place, we want the community and the police to trust that we have a fair, transparent, and open process. The other thing that's key is the civilian training dean. You may have heard, I told the DOJ at the settlement hearing recently, I told Judge Simon, that I did not believe that we had the right candidate pool for the civilian training dean. That is a vital position. If we're going to start transforming how we train community police officers, that civilian training dean must actually be able to work with community and police. And right now, there are two finalists, and neither of those candidates, I believe, A, responded to the right job description, and B, are actually qualified to do the transformation that we need them to do in the training division, right? So the DOJ has been very helpful in putting these federal mandates in place, but you need somebody like me who's been involved for 14 years on this settlement agreement to make sure internally we are doing exactly what it is we're supposed to do. And so I believe that watching and making sure these systems are put in place correctly is vital to having the community's trust and their community police officers.
And just a quick follow-up, since you have a little time left, would you change the way the citizen review committee is made up at all?
There will be an entirely new oversight board with the civilian oversight of policing. We will rethink all those other bodies, because many of those bodies won't need to exist. I know that there are a lot of advisory committees to policing today that have one-way communication. So they advise the police and they don't hear anything back. And so what we need to do is consolidate those committees. And as far as oversight, there has to be a review body. And the ballot measure says the review body is the city council, which means that the review process would actually happen in a public environment where the community would actually see it in a very transparent way, right? Now, there are labor laws and things that have to be worked out, which is why the commission now is putting those legal pieces and the individual pieces on the oversight board.
That was Commissioner Joanne Hardesty. And Vadim Mazursky, if you could answer, what is your response and how would you change any policies and practices of the Portland Police in response to the Department of Justice letter regarding their violations of the 2014 agreement about excessive use of force?
Thank you. It's an excellent question, because this is just another example of where there's no sense of urgency in our city hall. The reason that we're now implementing some of these recommendations to address the out of compliance finding by the Department of Justice is because the Department of Justice requested those remedies. The city hall itself, including my opponent, were not proactive in addressing these remedies. one of the remedies, the number one thing that the Department of Justice asked for is body-worn cameras. My opponent, Commissioner Hardesty, was against body-worn cameras. And what is not being said right now is that in every other jurisdiction, the videos are actually stored on computers that contractors own. I spoke with people in the Gresham body-worn camera unit. I spoke with the Beaverton body-worn camera unit. I even went to reached out to New Orleans and their police oversight agency and spoke with them. That data is stored on computers that contractors own because it's much easier to do that. It's more cost efficient to do that. And it prevents tampering by the police. Instead, over 3 years ago, when we were supposed to have implementing a body-worn camera program, my opponent was against it and it ended up being canceled. And so when we had the protests in the streets, and yes, some of the protests resulted in riots, there were a lot of accusations. We could have had evidence of what was going on if those police officers had body-worn cameras, which they do not. Instead, the Justice Department has requested, demanded, in fact, that our city implement body-worn camera programs, and now we're finally doing it. And that could have been done earlier. Certainly, when we procured the video cameras, or were supposed to procure it a couple of years ago, easily we could have said that those cameras, the footage is stored on other computers other than owned by the police, as we're doing right now. Instead of waiting for Department of Justice to lead, our City Hall should have led instead. And so the next is, of course, the Citizen Review Committee. And I'm on the Citizen Review Committee. I hear complaints against the police bureau and have for several years now. Once again, we get a lot of he said, she said, and if we had body-worn camera footage, it would be very helpful in ascertaining exactly what occurred if there was any policy violations. And now we are waiting for a new police oversight board. And I say waiting because it's been over 16 months since Portlanders passed overwhelmingly their desire to have a new police oversight board. And still, it's not up and running, and it looks like it'll be 2 to 3 more years before we have the new oversight board erected. So where is the sense of urgency? People want good policing. People want well-trained police. People want community oversight. But time and time again, we see in our City Hall that there's no sense of urgency. Back when I first joined the Citizen Review Committee, I actually went with a couple other individuals from the committee to Commissioner Hardesty's office, and we requested expansion on the oversight that the Citizen Review Committee has, change in the standard review to allow us to have more teeth in effectuating a change in the police bureau. We were ignored. In fact, different people from my bureau went to all the other commissioners, and none of them took up that cause. But now we have a new police oversight board that citizens have passed, that voters have passed, and we need to make sure that it's functioning. We need to make sure it's up quickly. The budget for that board is about 7 times more than the current oversight board. We can do great work, but once again, it's taking years, and the Department of Justice has to step in and say, give us a plan for that transition, because our City Hall has not. And then, of course, training. We need to make sure our training is the best in the country. And to that extent, we need to make sure that that training is being evaluated by third-party evaluators. So Training Dean is wonderful. Once again, DOJ wanted that, and so we're going to have that in place. But also make sure that it's not just the city evaluating its own training, but that we have consultants who are knowledgeable about what other cities are doing, knowledgeable about best practices, knowledgeable about such things as President Obama's pillars of 21st century policing, and make sure that our training here is the best so that police are out there serving the community and not over policing the community. Those things need to happen, but those things need to happen with urgency because we're lacking trust right now. And instead of City Hall working to build distrust, we need to ensure City Hall puts into place an ability for us to trust the police and other bureaus as well to do their job and listen to the community. And that's unfortunately something that has not been happening for a while now.
All right, thank you, Mr. Mazursky. Now, Commissioner Hardesty, you're welcome to have a quick 2-minute rebuttal. And in the following question, Mr. Mazursky will be able to have a rebuttal as well if needed.
Well, let me say my opponent thinks that doing things quicker are better than doing things well. I think that it's important to build, we're trying to change institutions, and changing institutions is not an overnight thing. And so as to the ballot measure, it took a while to get the committee seated, to get them trained, to get them to start creating their bylaws. And just like with Portland Street Response, you cannot change. Portland Street Response was the first change to 911 in 150 years. I was able to add a new first responder in my first year. And so, and I think my opponent perceives a difference in political perspective and policy approaches as divisive. I don't want a council singing Kumbaya. I want us to have these conversations in public, and I want us to have these conversations in detail. The time for backroom deals being cut about how city resources are spent was over the day I showed up. And the Portlanders want a city council that is transparent, that is fair, and actually provides for appropriate outcomes. The sense of urgency that my opponent speaks of are about all the boroughs that are not in my portfolio. The work I have done has had a major impact on policing. And as Portland Mercury said, in the history of the city of Portland, no other commissioner has had as big an impact as I have. And that's a positive outcome, not a negative. Thank you.
So this question, we will have Adeem Mazursky go first, and then Commissioner Hardesty and Mr. Mazursky can have a quick rebuttal if need be. The question is that many of our listeners in particular are concerned about climate change. And this is something that hasn't come up in a lot of debates and is not being talked about in a lot of political campaigns. How can the city of Portland take steps at the city level, particularly in the Bureau of Transportation, towards sustainability and zero emissions in our city? And Mr. Mazursky.
Thank you. I think it's very important that we actually have climate goals that we can achieve. Portland right now is behind other cities in achieving climate goals. We're not on pace to reach the 2035 climate goals that we set just a few years ago. We're not on pace to reach our 2050 climate goals. And part of that is, again, coordination and making sure that we have goals and metrics in place to achieve those. We do not. We have goals, and then implementing those goals has become a challenge all over our government at this point. So we have the climate fund right now, PSEF, which has $180 million to distribute to various organizations and nonprofit organizations throughout Portland. But the money is not tied to any particular metrics, making sure that we're actually achieving the 2035 action goals as the voters said that they wanted to have seen. The auditor came out with a scathing report initially saying that the funding should be frozen in order to make sure that the goals are met. And then later on, a watered down report saying that the goals should be established at some point in time. We're seeing a dereliction, unfortunately, there and enacting these climate change goals that most Portlanders want to have. And part of that is we need to electrify our fleet so that our buses, as well as other vehicles that the city owns and runs, are electric. We need to make sure that we have bike pathways that are safe, and so people can bike rather than drive. We need to make sure that any new or most of the new construction that we have is within easy access to public transportation, MAX and otherwise, so that people do not have to drive to work, so that people can save money on gas, which is very expensive, particularly now. And it helps communities all around Portland save money, but also it impacts our climate goals here in Portland. Now, the other thing is also we need to use incoming infrastructure money from the federal government to update our buildings. Half of all greenhouse emissions come from buildings that are old and do not have modern green energy certifications. And so we need to utilize that money that's coming in, of course, to build roads and other things that we have in our priority, but also improve our schools, improve our public buildings, and fund those improvements using federal money to actually help our climate goals. But we also need to have specific plans in place as to how to do that. And once again, based on the auditor's review, we're failing. $180 million that we're giving away without any accountability as to how that money is being used. And that's part of the dysfunction that we're seeing in City Hall, is having an idea but not following through. And so when I'm in office, I will follow through on those details. I will make sure that we have a plan, but also that we have metrics to how to achieve that plan. I've been involved in the U.S. government at various positions of leadership, including working at the highest levels of Department of Health and Human Services, enacting policies nationwide. I've also been in charge of two different offices for the U.S. government with budgets of over $300 million. I know what it's like to make a plan. I know what it's like to have metrics in place, and I know what it's like to succeed, and we need more of that success here in Portland.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Mazursky. And Commissioner Hardesty, how can the city of Portland take steps at the city level to address climate change?
What a great question. And as the Commissioner of Transportation, I made sure that as part of the IBR, the Interstate Bridge Project, that we actually would not exacerbate the cost for low income and communities of color. As the city of Portland's become less affordable, we have pushed people out to the edges of our city. And so I am thrilled that the Interstate Bridge will have light rail going to Evergreen in order to connect to the rapid bus service that is taking place in Vancouver. And Mayor Ann is supporting my campaign because she knows I have been a strong regional partner, making sure that when we repair this bridge, and we must, because in the next earthquake, it will fall down. We must repair it, but I'm not repairing it so that we can have more cars. I'm actually repairing it so that we'll have multi-modes of transportation, because it is important to get people out of their individual automobiles for single vehicle miles traveled. And we need them to have other options. And so I am thrilled to be part of that regional partnership. In fact, I'm going to DC at the beginning of June to visit both the Federal Transportation Administration